He looked over at her and sort of grinned, and she just grinned back. A few minutes later, he looked at her again and smiled, and she smiled back. This went on for some 45 minutes. Finally, he said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep it up." Why do men like this shoulder-to-shoulder silence from their wives? I really don't know. But I have to admit, it is different. Remember, you're pink, he's blue. If you interpret the world through pink, and pink alone, you miss something, just as he misses something if he sees and hears strictly through blue. You need to be lovers, of course, but you also need to be shoulder-to-shoulder friends. Does Scripture speak of this need for both love and friendship? In Song of Solomon, where the main theme is passionate, ache-all-over love, the Lord takes time in chapter 5 to say to the couple, quote, "Eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, O lovers." Then later in the same chapter, as the wife recounts how fine and dazzling her husband is, she says he's outstanding among 10,000, she completes her litany of praise by saying, "This is my beloved and this is my friend," verse 16. The New Testament also makes provision for friendship in a marriage relationship. The Greek word is phileo, and it refers to brotherly or friendship love. In Titus 2, verses 3 and 4, Paul says older women, who have been around the block, we might say, and are aware of what a husband is like, should teach the younger women to phileo their husbands, that is, to be friendly to them. So here you see Song of Solomon, friends, friends, and even the meaning in the Titus 2 passage is to be a friend, to be friendly. Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. For a while there, Sarah wasn't friendly. In an earlier chapter, I mentioned that I've often asked husbands if their wives love them, and they quickly reply, "Yes, of course." But when I ask them if their wives like them, often the answer is, "No, I'm not sure." I empathize because there was a time in my own marriage when I felt much that way. As Sarah will readily admit, she recalls this time of tension between us and realizes that she had grown very negative, trying to change everyone to conform to her standards, particularly of neatness. She complained about every crumb on the counter, every shoe on the floor, every wet towel left on a bed, every candy wrapper that missed the wastebasket. She was trying to help all of us, especially me and my two sons, to realize we would be happier if we were neater and more organized. Frankly, it wasn't working too well. It so happened that Sarah decided to take a trip to another city to see her mother, and she took along our daughter Joy. I stayed home with our two sons, Jonathan and David. A week went by, and Sarah and Joy returned from their trip. When I picked them up at the airport, her first question was, "Well, how was your time?" I replied, "Oh, it was good." "Did you miss me?" she wanted to know. I couldn't lie, so I said, "You know, we had a wonderful time. We just ate where we wanted to eat. We made forts when we wanted to make forts. We made the beds when we wanted to make the beds." Sarah got my message. She realized that we had made the beds for the first time that week just before coming to the airport, and she also realized that we hadn't really missed her that much. Oh, we still loved her as wife and mother, but we hadn't missed all the badgering and criticizing. Right there, Sarah made a choice that she would like me and our sons despite our sloppiness. She realized we had gotten married because we liked each other. We were friends. And she knew she needed to be friendly as well as loving. Wives, be patient with "Just Sit By Me." The wife who wants to show her husband that she likes him, that she is his friend, will be patient with his strange request to just come out here and be with me, watch what I'm doing, or just watch TV with me and let's not talk. When the husband calls the wife in to just sit by him, he is working on their relationship in a significant way. Not significant to her, perhaps, but extremely significant nonetheless. This is the way a husband communicates, at least many of them. There are always exceptions to everything that I say. But most males prefer shoulder-to-shoulder communication instead of ongoing face-to-face communication. And this can occur in the simplest of ways. For example, during our first year of marriage, Sarah and I were in our apartment. I was reading and she was on the couch. She said, "Shouldn't we be talking?" I replied, "I'm content just being with you." Research studies confirm the male preference for shoulder-to-shoulder communication with little or no talking. In one study, researchers performed a series of tests on males and females from four age groups, second graders, sixth graders, 10th graders, and 25-year-olds. Instructions for each pair of females and each pair of males were exactly the same. Enter a room, sit down on two chairs, and talk if you wish. As the test proceeded, every pair of females, no matter what their ages, reacted the same way. They turned their chairs toward each other, or at least they turned toward each other so they could be face to face, lean forward, and talk. The males reacted differently. They did not turn toward each other in any way. They sat side by side, shoulder to shoulder, looking straight ahead except for an occasional glance at each other. Because the females turned toward each other, or literally turned their chairs to face one another for direct face-to-face contact, the researchers assumed they would have the most intimate conversations. Actually, the most open and transparent of all the pairs, male or female, were the 10th grade boys. This does not surprise me. My observation is that men grow close by doing activities together, shoulder to shoulder. Over time, these common experiences and mutual interest result in a sense of bonding. There's little negativity and few complaints. They don't focus on the relationship, and they rarely talk about how they feel toward each other. As they become friends, one thing is certain. Each is there for the other. They have each other's back. Many men can recall being a blood brother with his boyhood friend. Two drops of blood blended together symbolized the forever bond. The commitment was to be shoulder to shoulder, fighting to the death if need be. Little girls do not enter this kind of dream world, but little boys do. They build their forts and are ready to do battle and die together. Even now as I write this, I feel the depth of emotion that every little boy has felt about his blood brothers. So what's my point? One day the little boy grows up, becomes a man, and meets a special young woman. He proposes and they marry. In his maleness, he assumes the two of them will be together, shoulder to shoulder, just as he has been with his male friends throughout his life. His request is simple. Hey, let's go do something together. Early on, his wife may cooperate. She is a real friend. However, three children and a ton of laundry later, there are so many more important things to do than fly fish or hang out. Besides, when they do have time to be together, she needs to talk. To her, talking is the way to connect. Being together and never talking, that is absurd. In most marriages, then, there is a real difference in basic needs. As we saw in chapter 9, she wants to talk, to be close. But in this chapter, we see that the natural bent of the male is to be shoulder to shoulder with a lot less talking. Obviously, there must be some give and take at this point, as there should be in so many other areas of the marriage. Just as sometimes he must make the effort to be with you face to face that we urged under the COUPLE, you must also make the effort to be with him shoulder to shoulder. When he calls you to be with him, and you do this with little or no talking, you will see the energy flow into him. And let me add, most men will eventually begin to talk, but they don't talk as soon as the wife wants, or perhaps as much. But you need to see he's not going to be absolutely silent. Guy friends with each other will open up and start talking. But there has to be that sense of brotherliness, that we are friends. Spend time together, stay together. Is putting up with this strange male quirk worth it? I can remember that as a boy growing up in Peoria, Illinois, I would often ride my bike up and down the street. I can recall one couple I would see often as I rode by. He'd be working under his car in the driveway, and she'd be out there sitting on a stool, smoking a cigarette, doing her nails, or just chewing gum. There was no other woman around. He was under the car, and she was saying nothing while he worked. For some reason, I always remembered that couple. In fact, years later, as I thought about them, I realized something. Many couples on our block divorced, but this couple never did. Somehow she understood that just sitting there with him and saying nothing while he worked was a positive thing. She bonded with him, even though they weren't talking. If just sitting with your husband, shoulder to shoulder, without talking, still seems a bit odd, read the following excerpts from typical letters we receive all the time. A wife writes, he likes to have me around on Saturday, just sort of hanging around while he works around the house. either helping or chatting, the side-by-side thing. I begun to do this, and he loves it. He actually shares more on what he is thinking these days. This does not come naturally, yet I end up benefiting also by having a spouse who feels loved by being respected, and he is much more loving. Another gal said, "When you talked about shoulder to shoulder, I knew exactly what you were talking about. My husband just finally came out and told me that sometimes all he wanted me to do was just sit with him. He accepted the fact that there are times when I will be correcting papers as I sit, a teacher's work is never done. And I've learned that if I'm getting up to check the laundry or do something else, all I have to do is tell him. As long as he knows what I'm doing and that I will be back, it's okay." I've counseled many couples who have not had a good heart-to-heart exchange for decades. What can a wife do? Try seeing his need for shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. If he has closed you off and gone quiet, the way to draw him out is simply being with him during some activity and not trying to draw him out. Don't talk, just be with him. Do this over a 12-week period and watch what happens. I can almost guarantee he'll start talking. Will he necessarily look at you face to face? Probably not. Will he talk for a long time at first? Probably not. Will you be energized by this? Probably not. Will he be energized by this? Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Trust me. Your husband has a need you do not have. It's not all about your need, ladies, as my wife Sarah often says. And that need is met in a way that feels unnatural to you. But as you are just being with him, shoulder to shoulder, his fondness for you will grow inexplicably. It really doesn't make a lot of sense, but the simple truth is, he just needs you to be there. So your husband will feel you value his shoulder-to-shoulder friendship when you tell him you like him and you show it. He knows you love him, but he often wonders if you like him. When you respond to his invitation to engage in recreational activities together or you come along to watch him, you don't have to go every time, but just now and then will energize him more than you realize. When you enable him to open up and talk to you as you do things shoulder to shoulder. When you encourage him to spend time alone, which energizes him to reconnect with you later. And when you don't denounce his shoulder to shoulder activities with his male friends to get him to spend more face to face time with you. Respect his friendships, and he will be more likely to want you to join him shoulder to shoulder at other times. Chapter 21, Sexuality. Appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy. The doctor and his wife did not have a happy marriage. They were on a crazy cycle, and it centered on her ultimatum, which she had laid down several years before. She would not respond to him sexually until he met her emotional needs. She wanted emotional release. She wanted him to talk to her face to face, and until he met her emotional needs, she wouldn't respond to him sexually. After all, that's what love was all about, wasn't it? Then through a series of events, the Lord spoke to her and said, "Who is supposed to be the mature one here? He is a new believer, and you've been in Christ for many years." She got the message. She decided to minister to her husband sexually, not because she particularly wanted to, but because she wanted to do it as unto Jesus Christ. She didn't have that need for sex, not like him. It wasn't within her, but she realized that this was her husband's need, and the Lord had spoken to her about meeting his need first. So she said, "All right, Lord, I will serve him and I will meet that need gladly." And she proceeded to do so. So what happened? Did her need for emotional release and talking face to face ever get met? She reported back to me, "When we lay there in bed afterward, I couldn't get him to shut up. They kicked the devil out of bed." This couple, who had been so unhappy for so many years because they had been in a lose-lose standoff, suddenly found a win-win situation. As she met his physical need, he reached out to meet her emotional need. Someone has said, just as the devil will do everything he can to bring two people together sexually before marriage, he does everything he can to keep them away from each other after marriage. This couple defeated the devil soundly. You might say they kicked him out of bed. If there ever were an issue that isn't really the issue, it is sex. Over the years, I've had dozens of couples come to me complaining they weren't getting along. Often the answer to the problem lay in the fact that she wanted intimacy and affection without all the sexual touching, while he wanted sex and was not being too patient with moments of affection only. Sex for him and affection for you is a two-way street. Just as he should minister to your spirit to have access to your body, so too you should minister to his body if you want to gain access to his spirit. Now let me insert here, women need sex. God has designed women to need sex. 1 Corinthians 7 is clear about that. So we're talking about the tendencies to lean in one direction or another. We get a lot of emails from women who are feeling deprived sexually, and we're very sensitive to that. But by and large, we find most tension is that the man tends to want sex more than the wife. The wife prefers more of an emotional connection first and foremost. And if that's not there, then she just feels used sexually. However, men, on the other hand, have a need for sex as an end in itself a lot of times and are so grateful when she takes care of that need because there's no other way that that need can be met than through her. Now, during counseling, a wife told me that she thought sex was man's number one need. I responded that sex is symbolic of his deeper need, which is respect. By way of analogy, a wife needs emotional release through talking. When that need is met, she feels loved. When a man refuses to talk, that symbolizes to her that he does not love her or care about her need. A husband has a need for physical release. The anatomy itself should make that obvious to us through sexual intimacy. When a wife refuses, that symbolizes to him that she does not care about him and does not respect him and his need. A wife also needs to think about how unfair it is to say to her husband, "Have eyes only for me," and then continually turn him down when he approaches her sexually. As a wife, you spell respect to your husband when you appreciate his sexual desire and need for you. Two keys to understanding your husband. There are two aspects to understanding your husband sexually. First, realize that his sexuality is much different from yours. Proverbs 5:19 says, "As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love." It is no coincidence that there is no Bible verse commanding a woman to be satisfied with her husband's breasts at all times. At our conference, everybody laughs at that, because they all see it as a ridiculous statement. But why is it ridiculous? Proverbs 5:19 is speaking to the fact that a man is visually oriented when it comes to sexual desire. He sees a beautiful woman, her face, and her figure, and he is stimulated. Women are not as visually oriented when it comes to sex, at least not to the degree that men are. Women will respond to the physique of a man, but ultimately, that's not the turn-on to her. Her temptation isn't just over the male body, whereas men have a struggle. I think we need look no further than the pornography industry to recognize that. Think about when you get out of the shower versus when he gets out of the shower. When you step out of the shower, he is all eyes, oblivious to everything else. But what happens when he steps out of the shower? You probably say something like, "Please stand on the bath mat," or "Be careful, I just waxed the floor." You see, because you're not as visually oriented. The second aspect of being able to appreciate your husband's sexual desire for you is that he needs sex release just as you need emotional release. 1 Corinthians 7:5, Paul says, "Stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Now again, this verse is illustrating we both need sexual intimacy, so hear me very clearly on that. But when it comes to our sexuality, both husband and wife need to meet each other's needs in a little bit of a different way. Paul says each is to fulfill his or her duty to the other. Husband particularly come under satanic attack when deprived of sexual release. Wives might be able to better understand this if they think about how they would feel if their husbands didn't want to talk or listen to them. Being deprived of emotional release would make most women miserable, and this is why women succumb to affairs because they're seeking that emotional connection as part of their human sexuality. Men can be seduced a little bit more by just simple sexual involvement. A young woman told the following story to Sarah after one of our conference sessions. Every Sunday, she and her husband would visit her parents, but one Sunday morning, she called her mother and said, "We're not coming." The mother asked, "Well, why not?" "Well, because my honey is in a twit," the daughter said. "Well, why?" inquired the mother. "Well, I suppose because we've not been sexually intimate for 7 days." Mom did not hesitate. Gently but firmly, she let her daughter have it. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Why would you deprive him of something that takes such a short amount of time and makes him so happy?" Embarrassed, the daughter shouted into the phone, "Mother, I can't believe you said that." But as the young woman finished relating the story to Sarah, she added, "My mom has been married for 47 years, and I don't know anyone who has a happier marriage." This mother gave her daughter good advice indeed. Sadly, many couples revolve on the crazy cycle because without sex, he feels disrespected and reacts in an unloving twit. And she dismisses him as childish. Round and round they go. But it doesn't have to be. Sarah says it best in our marriage conferences. "Wives, what if your husband didn't talk to you for 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months? You would think that abominable." I think you get my point. Some wives want their emotional needs met after marriage, but somehow lose sight of their husband's sexual needs. Remember, your son will have the same need. How do you want your daughter-in-law to treat him? Your son didn't ask to be made this way any more than your daughter or daughter-in-law asked to be made with the need to talk intimately on a regular basis. When Sarah says that, the women listen very intently. They have a light bulb moment. The golden rule works with sex too. The point here is that your husband's anatomy and design is much different from yours. He needs sexual release as you need emotional release, generally speaking. This is why he loves the act of sex in and of itself. It is a pleasurable act that brings him satisfaction. It is intense and it's released intense. Biologically, it's incredible. As a woman, you may feel that the two of you have to feel and be close in order to share sexually. For him, however, it is the reverse. The sexual act is what brings the two of you close. Remember that sex falls under the same category as everything else described in the energizing cycle, be it under COUPLE couple, what he is supposed to do for you, or chairs, CHAIRS, what you are supposed to do for him. The rule that never changes is you can't get what you need by depriving your partner of what your partner needs. There's an old story about a question a man came upon as he filled out a job application form. The category was sex, meaning male or female, but he answered, "Not enough." Men especially may smile, but the cold hard truth is that men are often lured into affairs because they're sexually deprived at home. A man who strays is usually given total blame for his affair, but in many cases he is the victim of temptation that his wife helped bring upon him. The second chapter of Proverbs describes in some detail the benefit in pursuing and acquiring knowledge, wisdom, and discretion. Verse 16 says that discretion will, quote, "deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words." A dose of respect beats a dose of Viagra any day. Being trapped by an adulteress is precisely what happened to the husband of a woman who wrote to me after she figured out why he had an affair. She realized that her husband had been craving admiration, just as she craved love from him. He was ripe for having an admiring woman tempt him. That's exactly what happened in the workplace. I'm not justifying this sin of this man whatsoever, but we're helping all of us understand these dynamics. We tend to give a little grace to a woman who's not loved at home, who gets an affair, "Will he love me?" Well, it's really not about sex in many cases with a man. It's because the woman believes in him, admires him, respects him, flattered him. The seductive woman of Proverbs isn't using sex, she was using flattery. So this woman, this wife, understood this, that her husband was ripe for that temptation. Though it wasn't justifiable, she was understanding his vulnerability. So even though they had enjoyed what people thought was a perfect marriage, For more than 20 years, they had four teenage children, active in the church, successful business. He strayed. And they separated for a while. But then the wife realized, and she said this, "I had become so busy with life, with the kids, that I had forsaken my husband in this area and left him vulnerable to attack from the enemy. He said that he had been craving something, but he didn't know what it was until she began to give him what he was craving. His need for this was so strong that at one point during our separation, he was willing to give up everything, marriage, family, business, reputation, even his relationship with the Lord, just to continue feeling the respect and admiration he was receiving from this other woman. He had an extremely intense spiritual battle during this time because he knew what the right thing to do was, but he did not want to give up what he was receiving from her. God is helping me see my part in the breakdown of our marriage. My husband is a good-willed man, and I know that he loves me, and he knows that I love him." The letter went on to say that she had tried the respect test with amazing results. She started speaking with great respect to her husband, and he immediately responded by telling her how much it turned him on to hear her say those respectful things. In fact, she relates, "We immediately shared a very intimate sexual experience. It seems that a dose of respect beats a dose of Viagra any day." Not all affairs end on such a positive note. A husband who had been deprived of sexual release and ultimately strayed wrote to say, "I don't blame her for my immorality, but she doesn't own up to anything. I'm not blaming her, but she's not blameless. She never said she contributed to the problem. I want to forget it, but she won't let me forget it. I did wrong, but I didn't just one day decide to go out with another woman. If I had felt she respected me, maybe I wouldn't have done it. I felt at times like she felt I was a failure. So when someone said, 'You're the greatest thing since sliced bread,' I went for it. She says I ran to a blonde bimbo, but the other woman made me feel really good. It had nothing to do with the sex. Somebody thought I was okay. The more she told me I was a good man, the more I was drawn toward it." If he loves me, how can he be tempted by other women? Sexuality often becomes the reason that couples are not as close as they could be, but it manifests itself in ways you might not suspect. Men may want to be open with their wives, but when they want to be open on topics that threaten rather than increase feelings of love, some women grow uncomfortable, if not downright upset. A wife may be wondering why her husband isn't more open, when the truth is she told him years ago not to be. As a rule, a wife wants more emotional intimacy only on subjects that increase feelings of love between her husband and herself. When the husband shares any kind of dark side struggles, let's say with sexual temptation, she grows very uncomfortable or even hurt and angry. She may instruct him to be silent and to change. In other words, be like a woman. We don't lust for men's bodies, so don't you lust for women's bodies. It is quite all right for her to share her struggle with body image, weight control, fears, and worries. The husband is to listen and empathize with her on all of these subjects. She feels so much better afterwards because in her mind this increases feelings of love between them. The problem, of course, is that he doesn't struggle with body image, weight control, fears, and worries as she does. He has different struggles. Because his wife does not have those same challenges, his male concerns usually don't count when it comes to emotional intimacy. So the husband clams up, especially after being scolded. This then contributes to the wife's conclusion that he cannot be emotionally intimate. In actuality, he has been told not to be open. She has a high standard of what emotional intimacy is, but it must entail energizing the love between them and releasing her burdens. If he communicates something that isn't energizing and it creates a burden for her, i.e., sexual temptations he may have when he sees attractive women, he is out of line. She wonders, how can he be tempted by another woman? Does he love only me or not? She cannot comprehend that seeing some well-endowed woman at the office with a plunging neckline would turn him on. So she assumes that he must be lying. She concludes that the reason he has this sexual attraction toward the woman is because they have already spent a lot of time together, or at least he wants to spend time with her. They've been talking, getting to know each other, getting close, etc. She cannot understand the concept that he could be aroused simply by looking at someone he barely knows. She lets him know that it isn't right to be tempted by any other woman in any way, and she doesn't want to hear about that kind of thing again. And of course, let me say, I know every wife is threatened at the core of her being. She's not wanting to be mad or angry or wrathful toward her husband. At a certain point, she moves into fear and even self-deprecation, feeling like she's not good enough. So fear is what drives these comments. But she probably doesn't hear about it again because she said, in effect, "Don't talk to me again about this." Although her husband still struggles with his visual orientation problem and wishes he could share it with her. Remember the admonition to the husband in Proverbs 5:19? He is to let his wife's breast satisfy him at all times and no other. Most of Proverbs 5 is directed at warning husbands of the dangers of adultery. Why? Because the wise teacher who wrote this passage was trying to give men a healthy view of sex. The husband who loves his wife should delight in God-given sex, which means only in the marriage bond. And remember also, Jesus warned, everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Again, you see in Matthew 5:28 the visual orientation of the male. Our Lord understood that men are stimulated visually. Sex is in the forefront of man's consciousness, and whenever he sees someone visually seductive, he can be stimulated. Simply put, a man is responsive to what he sees. He needs his wife's understanding of his struggles. If he wanted to be untrue to her, he would never allude to this problem at all. A wife longs to receive her husband's closeness, openness, and understanding. You can achieve this in two ways. One, do your best to give him the sexual release he needs, even if on some occasions you aren't in the mood. And two, let him know you are trying to comprehend that he is tempted sexually in ways you don't understand. As you allow him to talk about his struggles, you have all the more opportunity to be his friend as well as his lover. Now, we're not urging this on a regular basis because men ultimately have to be accountable to other men. But at some point, you need to convey to him that you understand his struggle rather than you have this contempt and disrespect and disdain toward him because of this struggle. As we've said, I hope your sweet daughter-in-law does not have that attitude toward your precious boy who is going to have some of the same issues, just as women have their issues in other categories. If your husband is typical, he has a need in this area that you don't have. When you shame him, punish him, or deprive him, he feels dishonored for who he is. If your husband feels you do not respect his struggle, his desire for you, and his maleness, he'll pull back from you. But he needs you. You knew that before marriage. And some of you ladies who have gone through sexual abuse and childhood, whatever, ultimately the challenge is you need to do this unto Jesus Christ. You need to see Christ beyond the shoulder of your husband. And you need to actually see that you're worshiping Christ. You are meeting a need. God designed this. The blueprint is his. Whatever man has done to defile this, you need to work on setting that over to the side and see Jesus Christ in this, and do this unto Christ. That statement that I just made has brought a great deal of healing to those women who have been sexually abused, because they don't want to deprive their husband, but they struggle with the past, and the way out of that is to bring holiness into this, doing this unto Christ. But as you recognize your husband's need and seek to meet it, you will find him reaching out to meet yours. There is probably no more effective way to give the crazy cycle four flat tires and get the energizing cycle running on all six cylinders. Her respect motivates his love, and that meeting of that sexual need energizes him. He's so appreciative. Many men just relax and just have nothing but fondness in their heart toward a wife who understands their vulnerability and their need in this area. Well, in conclusion, he will feel you appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy when you respond to him sexually more often and even initiate sex periodically. That's something that my wife, Sarah, speaks at our conferences. When you understand he needs sex release, just as you need emotional release. When you let him acknowledge his sexual temptations without fearing he'll be unfaithful and without shaming him. And again, that's not an ongoing conversation. He needs to be with other men, but it needs to be part of your conversation ever so often. And when you don't try to make him open up to you verbally by depriving him of sex. Chapter 22. The energizing cycle will work if you do. A lady wrote, I sent him an email one day, letting him know why I respect him. He told me that night he was very touched. I really just prayed and let God lead me in what to say to him, and it worked. Also, for some time, we have sent see how much I love you type messages, but I've changed mine to see how much I respect you message, and he loves it. The following week, my husband called me in the middle of the day to tell me the reasons he loves me. We've been married almost 10 years, and he's never done that. This wife's letter is one of dozens that I could use to sum up the power that can be at work in marriage when the energizing cycle is in high gear. Understanding that a wife's deepest need is for love and a husband's deepest need is for respect, based on Ephesians 5:33, is the core in how to make your marriage better. And I need to say, women need respect, but respect is that esteem part of the C-O-U-P-L-E, the E of that. And men need that love, they need that relationship. It's the R in the CHAIRS acronym, but again, the nuance is a little bit different. But yes, we all need love and respect equally, but the leaning toward love, the leaning toward respect is that way. In energizing cycle terms, his love motivates her respect motivates his love. How does a husband spell love to his wife? As we've seen, love to wives is spelled C-O-U-P-L-E. Following is a brief review of these six concepts. If a husband memorizes and uses even one or two of them each day, he will do his part in keeping the energizing cycle going. Husbands should ask themselves these questions. Number one, about closeness to C. Am I always remembering to move toward her and accept her need to talk and connect with me to be reassured of my love? Two, on openness, the O, do I share my thoughts with her, and am I sure I'm not resisting her efforts to draw me out? Three, understanding, you, am I careful not to try to fix her every time she talks about one of her concerns or problems? Am I remembering that she has an integrated personality, and whatever happens affects all of her, especially her emotions? Four, peacemaking, the P. Am I always willing to resolve issues, and am I careful to never say, let's just drop it and move on? Five, loyalty, the L. Do I constantly look for ways to tell her that I will be loyal to her forever, that she's the one love of my life, the only woman for me? Six, esteem. Do I always let her know that I treasure her and put highest value on her as a person? Do I let her know that what she does and thinks are important to me? Does she know I couldn't possibly do without her? How does a wife spell respect for her husband? A wife spells respect for her husband CHAIRS and uses these six concepts to let him know how important and vital he is to her. Wives should ask themselves these questions. Number one, conquest the C. Am I always standing behind him and letting him know I support him in his work and endeavors in his field? Number two, hierarchy the H. Do I let him know I respect and appreciate his desire to protect and provide for me and the family? What have I said recently to communicate this? Number three, authority, the A. Have I gone on record that because he has the primary responsibility for me, even to die for me, I recognize him as having the primary authority? Do I let him be the leader? How have I helped him in that regard recently? Number four, insight, the I. Do I trust his ability to analyze things and offer solutions and not just depend on my intuition? Number five, relationship, the R. Do I spend shoulder-to-shoulder time with him whenever I can? Do I let him know that I am his friend as well as his lover? Six, sexuality, the S. Do I honor his need for sex release even when I don't feel like it? As a husband spells out love to his wife through C-O-U-P-L-E and a wife spells out respect to her husband through CHAIRS, they can't help but meet each other's needs. The beauty of it is, if you meet a need in your spouse, it will come back to you as your spouse meets one of your needs. The key is in always being willing to cut your spouse some slack, as this woman discovered. "I think I might have just realized something," she says. "It is not that my husband is not showing me love or trying to understand me. It is that I am back to that place where if he doesn't do it exactly the way I want it, it's no good. Okay, I'm an idiot. He is showing me love, kindness, in many ways, and I've chosen to focus on one thing that I don't like. So, can you extend your 2x4 through the computer and hit me upside of the head? What I need is to rejoice in the ways my husband shows his love for me and express my appreciation for those. Would you please pray for me to really get this, internalize it, act on it, and have it be my first response instead of having the negative critical spirit come first?" You know, I love this wife's honesty, and she represents the spirit of almost every woman I've met. And I also appreciate her insight. She realizes she's a lot like Eve, who had paradise, but wanted more. Read Genesis 3. We call it the insatiability of the female, never satisfied. In a fallen world, you cannot always have more. You can't grasp the holy grail of perfection, which is always beyond your reach. But you can embrace love and respect, which will always provide more than enough to energize your marriage. Act on the principles embodied in COUPLE and CHAIRS, and your relationship as husband and wife is bound to be less negative and more positive. From the energizing cycle to the rewarded cycle. In part 3, I will discuss how you can complete the love and respect process, which is designed to bring your marriage from bad to good, and from good to better. I will discuss how you can combine your faith with everything you have learned to bring you the reward of a happy marriage. I call this the rewarded cycle. His love blesses regardless of her respect. Her respect blesses regardless of his love. Again, his love blesses regardless of her respect. Her respect blesses regardless of his love. The rewarded cycle will show you the best way to develop the ability to give your spouse what he or she needs most as you bring your faith in Christ directly into your acts of love and respect. You will learn how a husband's unconditional love mirrors Christ's love for the church, and how a wife's unconditional respect is like the church's reverence for Christ. I will share how the rewarded cycle develops your inner maturity and freedom of spirit, how it can make you good examples to those around you, and how you can win your spouse in a wise way. These three cycles, the crazy cycle, the energizing cycle, and the rewarded cycle, basically are answering three questions. The crazy cycle answers the question, why do we negatively react to each other? Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. It answers that question when the issue isn't the issue. And the energizing cycle is answering the question, hey, what's the best way to motivate another person? The best way to motivate another person is meeting that person's deepest need, especially during conflict. His love motivates her respect. Her respect motivates his love. When you do that during conflict, it softens the spirit of the other person. But the third question really is answered in the rewarded cycle. You know, what if I do all of this? What if I try to reduce the crazy cycle? What if I try to get us on the energizing cycle? But we're at a season, we're in a patch here, where my spouse is not responding to me. Is that which I'm about to do going to be wasted? Is there any reward in this? The answer is about to be told to you. Part 3, the rewarded cycle. Throughout this book, I've emphasized that if the husband and wife are both people of basic goodwill, they can use love and respect principles to make a bad marriage into a good one and a good marriage into a great one. I have stressed the idea that you must trust your spouse. You must be the first to act on these principles and not withhold what your spouse needs most in order to get your spouse to give you what you need most. We've also seen in preceding chapters that not only does God command men to love their wives and women to respect their husbands in Ephesians 5:33, but that we must do this unconditionally. But what if your husband doesn't show you love when you show him respect? What if your wife doesn't show you respect as you show her love? If you get no results from practicing love and respect, why bother? The rewarded cycle gives you the answers to these questions. In a real sense, the rewarded cycle is the most important part of this book. Read on, and you will see why. In fact, when I first discovered these principles, I shared what I'm about to share with you with Sarah, and she said, what you just shared on the rewarded cycle is the key to everything. Chapter 23, The Real Reason to Love and Respect. Perhaps the major problem that keeps so many couples somewhere between the crazy cycle and energizing cycle is the fear that even though they try to practice the love and respect connection, it won't work. Here are some sample remarks I received by email or in person in conferences. My fear is that I'm going to move forward in good faith, but my spouse will mistreat me. Or, my wife will continue showing disrespect, riding a bigger broom than ever. Or, my husband will continue to be unloving. He'll enroll in the A1 jerk school and be first in his class. Of course, there is always the exception, someone who is afraid to try respect because it just might work. So true. A wife wrote, said, "Your suggestion to apologize and let him know how much I respect him is great. I intend to do that. But my heart is afraid that he may react positively, and I don't know if I'm ready for more than what we have now. A mutual understanding for our roles as parents. It frightens me that I can do something so powerful and not be ready if he took a different kind of interest in me." Another question I often hear is, why show love and respect when it isn't reciprocated? One couple attended one of our conferences. She agreed to try respect, but according to her husband, it faded away like a mist. She returned to her old self. She has not trusted me due to her relationship with her father. She has in the past been a vocal man-beater with her negative thoughts and comments about men in general. I feel like an orphan in my own home. I feel like a husband with no wife. What I do experience of her presence is her critical, negative, hostile, and judgmental attitude. My emotions for my wife are being buried daily by her attitude towards me when she makes me feel less than a man. I need to understand my wife, and I need wisdom on how I can respond to her attacks. Don't give up. Trust God to work. Letters like the one above are heartbreaking. But my advice is always the same. Don't give up because it doesn't seem to be working. Keep showing your spouse unconditional love or unconditional respect. Look for even the slightest improvements. A husband doesn't bring flowers, but he does fix the leaky faucet. The wife still has a headache more than you like, but she has toned down the negativity. Remember the pink and blue lenses? We don't readily see what is happening in our favor, nor do we see the impact we might be making on our spouse. One graphic example is a letter from a wife who explained that her husband called from his night job to tell her he got an unexpected bonus check. "Praise God," she said, and that made him angry. Then he started to complain about how hard he had to work. She tried to remind him they really needed the extra money, and why not be thankful? As he continued to pour out his dissatisfaction with his lot in life, she, who was very much the lecturing type, decided not to give him another gentle lecture to stop feeling sorry for himself. Instead, she got respectfully quiet. As her silence continued, he said, "You better stop this quiet stuff. I mean it. It isn't like you, and it's making me nervous. Something's wrong here. I don't like it. I never said for you to be quiet. I said to listen to me without always saying something. So stop being quiet." I split a gut when I read that email. When she wrote to say that her respectful quietness apparently wasn't working, I replied that actually it was working big time. At this season of their marriage, her husband's bad habits had to go, and he was already under conviction. The quietness probably caused him to hear himself, and he didn't like what he was hearing, so he lashed out. But her quietness was working in a powerful way, and I urged her to be patient and let the Holy Spirit convict her husband. Months later, she wrote back, "We are doing so well in our marriage. Our arguments have changed for the better." Her husband's spiritual life had significantly improved as well, and she gave credit to God, but added, "I'd like to think it had a lot to do with my new attitude and silence and respect and word and deed." Well, absolutely, it had everything to do with that. This wife is a perfect example of how it's so easy, though, to have doubts when things don't look as if they are going well. It takes time. In many cases, months. I say a lot of times, if you've been married for 27 years, it's going to take 27 months. 7 years, 7 months. That's a rule of thumb. There's nothing in scripture about that, but hang in there. It will begin to change. Don't doubt the light from God's word in your dark times. Here's another example of a wife who felt nothing was happening but later was amazed. She called her ex-husband and apologized because she hadn't always respected his position in their home. She is a Christian and he is not. There was silence. And then he responded, "Thank you." That ended the conversation, but several days later he called at midnight in tears, wondering why she had made her apology. Well, she explained she had to ask forgiveness for not being what she should have been as a wife. Again, the conversation ended abruptly. Not much seemed to be happening. Another week passed, and again he called at midnight. He had been thinking of everything he had done, and he was sorry. He went on about all of his mistakes, and then she said some of the few kind words he has ever said to me. In another situation, a wife moved out and bought another home. I coached the husband on how to behave toward her in more loving ways. This went on for some time, and he was seeing little progress. Then one day she said, "Are you wanting me to beg you to ask me to come back home?" You see, he didn't think that what he was doing was working, but then came that moment where she basically says, "I'm ready to return." The above are just a few examples of what can happen. Don't give up because weeks or months pass with no response. Don't interpret delay as defeat. Don't assume that what you are doing is unfruitful. Most often, love or respect is working on your spouse more than you realize. Something is transpiring in the soul of that person. Have confidence that God will work. And let me insert, if you've been unloving or disrespectful and now suddenly you're loving and respectful, it's too good to be true. I mean, there is going to be a little cynicism and skepticism and suspicion. So give some grace to your spouse. Don't expect this instantaneous response because this is too good to be true and they're just going to wait for the other shoe to drop. So stay with this. When it simply doesn't work, what then? Well, what is your worst fear in marriage? As a husband, is not your worst fear that you put on love, but your wife shows you contempt? In response to your goodwilled attempt to be close, to be open, to be understanding, to be peacemaking, to be loyal, to be esteeming, she remains disrespectful. Whereas a wife, is not your worst fear that you put on respect, but your husband is more unloving than ever? You have learned the foreign language of respect by appreciating his work efforts, his desire to protect and provide, to serve and lead, to give you his insights. You have also tried to give him shoulder-to-shoulder friendship and more sexual intimacy. Despite all of this, he remains unloving. In good faith, you moved first as the mature one, but he did not change. As Jesus spoke of the trials and tribulations believers might have to go through for him, he mentioned that, quote, "a man's enemies will be the members of his household," Matthew 10:36. For you, it may feel just this way. So, should you simply say, "This love and respect thing doesn't work"? When you love or respect unconditionally, you are following God and his will for you. Ultimately, your spouse and your marriage have nothing to do with it. You are simply demonstrating your obedience and trust in the face of an unlovable wife or disrespecting husband. Unconditional love and unconditional respect will be rewarded. I call this the rewarded cycle because Jesus said, "If you love those who love you, what reward do you have?" Matthew 5:46. Jesus could have had your troubled marriage in mind when he said that. I believe Paul, the apostle, also had your marriage in mind when he penned in Ephesians 6, verses 7 and 8, right after the section on marriage, "Serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know that the Lord will reward," there it is again, "everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free." In the immediate context, Paul refers to how slaves can serve their masters, but notice that he ends the passage by saying it applies to free persons as well. In other words, this idea is for all believers. If you trace his thinking back a few verses, you find him mentioning the same principle concerning children and their parents, which is Ephesians 6, 1-4, and also husbands and wives, which is Ephesians 5, 22-33. Paul is saying that whatever we do as to the Lord, we will receive back from the Lord. In marriage, everything you do counts, even if your spouse ignores you. That is what the rewarded cycle is all about. I sometimes explain the rewarded cycle like this. His love unto Jesus Christ, regardless of her respect, and her respect unto Jesus Christ, regardless of his love. When I first began teaching the biblical truth as it pertains to marriage, I was unsure how people would receive it. Amazingly, many welcome the rewarded cycle message with open arms. Those who feel hopeless suddenly catch the truth that what they do matters to God. Nothing is wasted. This thought not only rejuvenates poor marriages, but it is helpful to good marriages. The key principle of the rewarded cycle is just as relevant for a good marriage as a poor one. Ultimately, all husbands and wives should be practicing love and respect principles first and foremost out of obedience toward Christ. If they do not, it is so easy to start being arrogantly proud about our great marriage. All couples must take heed. Those who think they stand could easily fall. So many marriages seem to be getting along just great, and then wham, the wheels come off. If we take our eyes off Christ, or never put our eyes on Christ in the first place, we are building on sand, and when the storms come, we can be swept away. Jesus was very clear about that in Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27. Another benefit of the rewarded cycle for a good marriage is that you can understand why you're treating each other as you do and be more equipped to explain the love and respect connection to other couples. And as other couples learn the love and respect connection, the rewards increase exponentially. What are the rewards? Well, we get some of them on earth, but we get an incredible reward in heaven. Before I address that, I want to just remind us what unconditional means. Unconditional means there is no condition, no circumstance, no situation that can get me to hate you. There is no situation, circumstance, or condition that can get me to show you contempt. Unconditional doesn't mean you give the other person license to do whatever they want. That would be ludicrous. What it means is, I'm going to be a loving person in spite of you. I'm going to be a respectful person in spite of you. I'm going to be who God calls me to be, independent of you. And as I always say, in many instances, this is really to be seen in this light. Your spouse is irrelevant. I don't say that sincerely. It's a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. But at the end of the day, God calls me to love Sarah, whether she's lovable or not. And I do this out of trust and obedience toward Christ. And Sarah does what she does out of trust and obedience toward Christ. We'll revisit that. But I want to say up front, you need to understand that's what we mean by unconditional. It's about who God calls you to be, not about who God calls your spouse to be, even though we want them to be all that God intends for them to be. But at the end of the day, I can't control the outcomes in my spouse. I can only control my actions and reactions to my spouse, and it's that that God will reward forever and ever and ever. He's going to say, attaboy, attagirl. And I want you to envision what's coming for some of you in a marriage that you think is really going nowhere. No, everything you do counts. Everything you do matters. And I want to explain that to you. Heaven's reward, the eternal ah. I heard a godly man with cerebral palsy speak. He had a delightful wit. He said, God is preparing me for heaven. I'm in his oven, so to speak. I'm being baked for an eternal purpose. I'm not finished yet. When I die and stand before him, he is going to say, well done. I laughed with delight as tears streamed down my cheeks. Well, Jesus is preparing us to hear, well done. He wants to say, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Matthew 25, verse 21. Have you ever thought about what it will mean to share your master's happiness? It will be joy without measure. Think of your graduation day, wedding day, birthday, child's birthday, summer vacation,